All right, good evening, everyone. I'm here to present the probation and community justice 2013 budget. I'm not going to be as flashy as Amy, I'm sorry to say. I loved all her charts.
You're flashy in your own right.
Thank you.
Hey, Pat, yeah. Pull your mic a little bit closer to you. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I believe you all have this sheet in your budget. Remarkable there. There's really a marginal change in the net local cost. We were fortunate this year. I think it was the first time in my history of being in the probation department, which is 24 years, that we did not receive the state aid cut. We were maintained at last year's level, so that was a very pleasant surprise for us. Full-time equivalents continue to go down. Doesn't seem like very long ago. We were at 40 staff. The 2013 recommended budget does include the loss of a probation officer position, and we also had a person retire and come back part-time, and that's why there's that funny 0.54 there. So over-target request that is supported by the tentative budget refers to amping up our budget line for the electronic monitoring program. We'd like to increase funds to that line. We had a 36% increase in the use of electronic monitoring last year, mainly in the adult criminal population. As everyone knows, the electronic monitoring program is an ATI program. It's also a program that we use for our adjudicated youth to help prevent placement. And it is a real cost saver for the county when you compare the daily rate of electronic monitoring, $7.25 a day, compared to the cost of, say, board out at the jail or placement in a facility for youth, which is upwards of $300 a day. So any questions about that particular slide or request? And that is use of certified rollover, by the way.
We'll do the questions at the end.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. The over-target request not supported by the tentative budget is a probation officer position. So a little bit of background about this position. This position was approved in last year's budget cycle by county administration as a one-time funded position through the end of this year. So that position will end as of December 31st. And the position is job shared by two part-time POs who each work 20 hours a week. And together they supervise a caseload of approximately 100 adult criminal supervision cases who are classified as low risk by our COMPASS risk and needs assessment instrument, the validated assessment that helps us determine a person's risk and safety in the community. So again, more background about this. In 2011, after doing a lot of research and looking at evidence-based practice principles, we decided to make the move to reorganize the department's caseloads. And based on the principle that you want to concentrate your resources on the medium to high-risk offenders, allowing probation officers maybe to have smaller caseloads, but to devote their energy to those people, we decided to make and design this high, low-risk caseload because the evidence supports that one probation officer can supervise a really large number of low-risk people. We were nervous about this when we first did it. You know, I'm kind of old school, and it seemed a little, we were worried what's going to happen with these 100-some people. Are they going to stay out of trouble? Are they going to get rearrested? Are they going to have higher violations? But it has proven very successful. What we've learned in a year and a half of having this caseload is that the violations are extremely low, the rearrests are extremely low, and compliance is high, and we are getting early discharges for these people. So it's been a very successful venture. And of course, I want to be able to keep this position and keep this low-risk caseload going. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's proven itself. And to not, to lose this position, the probation officer position, does mean I'm going to have to figure out what to do with these 100 people. And it's going to mean another reorganization of the department in some way. So after meeting with Joe and learning that he would not support this OTR, I went back to the drawing board with my senior staff and tried to figure out what could we do that would meet the needs of the department but maybe cost the county a little bit less. And this is what we came up with, this proposal. So I would like to change my OTR for a probation officer position and propose this one instead, which is for a probation assistant. This is a 2 grades below a probation officer, and it has a cost saving to the county of almost $20,000. Now, a probation assistant is a paraprofessional position in the department. Probation assistants are allowed to monitor caseloads in a more limited way than what a full probation officer does. They are allowed to have communications with the courts. They file violations but appear in court, but it is the exception, not the rule. That kind of work is geared for probation officers. But they can do things similar to a probation officer, but in a much more limited capacity. So my thought was, and especially in light of the fact that we have what's called a new supervision rule going into effect December 1st, that the probation assistant title can probably handle the contact requirements of this low-risk caseload, that we really don't need the probation officer title monitoring these people. Now, the new supervision rule is being promulgated right now, and what it tells us and what it directs probation officers to do, it tells us how often we have to see probationers depending on their risk level, depending on what this validated risk assessment tells us. The higher the risk level, the more often we have to see them. The higher the risk level, you have to do more home visits. You have to make more collateral contact. And that's really where you should be focusing your attention, and are on those people. The low-risk people, not so much. And the new supervision rule underscores that. They really want the focus to be on the high-risk people and the medium-risk people. And so they changed the contact requirements for the low-risk probationers. And I believe, given the job description of the probation assistant, that fits nicely.
Yes. Are you ready for? I just put my hand up to get in line.
Yeah, I have you down, Pam.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Waiting until she gets done.
The probation assistant title also can handle other administrative duties in the department. I have an absconder caseload, people who have absconded from the supervision. That's a caseload of 40 people. We're still obligated to track them down. So that would be a perfect a fit for the assistant to get on the internet and to search people and try to locate them and get them to get back into compliance or turn themselves in on their warrants. Probation officers are spending an incredible amount of time hooking up electronic monitoring equipment, taking off the equipment, hooking up the SCRAM. That is a perfect responsibility for a probation assistant. That would free up probation officers to be spending the time they should be spending doing their motivational interviewing and making their referrals and spending the quality time they need to with the probationer. So that is my proposal. I do think it meets the needs of the department. I think it meets the needs for the county. And as far as public safety goes, I think it's a good fit as well. I really think that with this low-risk caseload, knowing what we know now after a year and a half, that public safety would not be compromised. So
okay.
Thank you for your consideration.
Pam and then Martha. Peter,
yes.
And then Mike.
Thank you. Thank you for all this information. I'm not quite clear on, you have had these two part-time people this position that we funded on a one-time basis. And if you change this position to a lower level, will these people continue to be working in these positions, or what will you do?
No, they leave. Their position ends December 31st.
Okay.
So what I would like to do is fill that empty position with the new proposal with a probation assistant.
Because I see.
I think the probation assistant can handle that low-risk case, although these two people are not lecturing.
Right. So the obligation ended as of the end of the year to the people who are doing the job right now. So then we would be hiring a different kind of position.
Correct.
For doing similar work but paying a lot less.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Martha.
Thanks, Pat. So are these dollars, that's the salary plus fringe, right?
Correct.
Is this the first time Joe's hearing it?
No.
Can I ask Joe for your comments on it?
With respect to the recommendation on UTR, or lack thereof recommendation, again, last year as we were trying to put the budget together and requiring personnel reductions throughout the county. On this particular one, we had basically negotiated an understanding with the department where, much like in many other places where we've really tried to phase in and out of these difficult situations, we agreed that we would phase down this roster instead of taking one abrupt cut. And so that was the basis of the understanding where we'll put some one-time money in, and this will give you a chance to adjust for 2013, and you'll be down by one position. So as we looked at the budget this year, the request was in to sustain the position, and again, we felt it was appropriate to hold to the original understanding, which is to bring the roster down. What you're seeing now is less expensive than what we saw. It's still an add of $67,000 to the, obviously, to the local bottom line. So, again, in terms of the basis of the recommendation, that was it. If you have any other questions? So
would you reconsider? I mean, if you were looking at if this had been the original OTR?
We would have looked at it the same way.
Okay.
Again, just because other departments kind of took their medicine in 2012, and here we allowed some of that glide path to carry it into 2013. So we would have looked at it the same way.
Okay. Thank you.
I have Peter and then Mike.
A comment and a question. Sitting at this table at this particular time in the year, I've heard over and over again, if you don't spend this money now, you're going to spend a lot of money later. And so actually this is a saving, and I've often been skeptical of that argument. But there is one thing, the electronic monitoring, where it's absolutely a slam dunk that under no circumstances should we ever refuse to give money for electronic monitoring if we have people that we would electronically monitor, but instead we're boarding them out. I mean, that is obviously a money saver. So I'm not saying that you're doing it now, but I just wanted to make that comment, okay? And now the question. Can you somehow tell us... God, I'd hate to be asked this question if I was sitting in your shoes, but how is this going to hurt people? How is this going to hurt somebody if this position doesn't get funded? What's going to be the bad effect?
Well, this caseload is made up of 100 people, so I'm going to have to redistribute those 100 people back to the existing staff. And the whole idea to begin with in making this caseload was to reduce caseload sizes for the probation officers who handle the medium to high-risk people so that they can concentrate their efforts. So if the caseload sizes, you know, increase because I have to redistribute these cases, then that kind of blows the evidence-based practice and best practices out of the water because now their caseload sizes are going to be bigger.
So you can't, like, increase that to 120 instead of 100 or something like that? I mean, you couldn't supervise less the low-risk people and absorb it that way.
Well, that's what we used to do. Probation officers carried a whole variety of cases. They would carry the medium and the high and the low. But what we found happening is that the caseload sizes were 70, And cases were getting lost because it's just too many people to kind of keep track of, especially when you have those medium to high risk people that you really need to devote the time and attention to. It was a huge relief for staff when we made this transition. They totally embraced this idea. They were ecstatic. And they still like it because they have a much more manageable caseload size. I mean, there's other things that you have to do. There's paperwork, there's quarterly reports, there's a lot of stuff that goes along with having a case on your caseload. And so to just take that element away, get rid of those low risks, it was incredible for staff. They just felt so much better and, you know, have been able to provide really good service to the medium to high risk people. And those are the people we want to focus on. Those are the ones who are at risk to public safety.
So if I understand what you're saying that this will increase significantly a burden on people who are already, I mean, not probationers, but people in your department who are already burdened with very large caseloads.
Well, it just means that their caseloads are going to be that much higher. Yep. I have to distribute 100 people between maybe 4 or 5 probation officers.
Okay, thank you.
I have Mike and Martha. Are you going round
question.
Two? Go ahead, Mike.
Pat, would you happen to know approximately how many private placement adoption investigations your department does each year? Any idea?
I would not know that. I would have to ask.
The reason I'm asking, and I brought this up in prior years, is some counties charge for that service. And I'm wondering if that might be a source of some revenue that we could look at. I have no idea. I experienced in other counties charges of in the $250 range, for example.
I am aware that other counties change. That is kind of a topic of discussion amongst probation directors. The former director and myself, I've never pursued that. I don't believe we do that many. If we do 10 a year, that would probably be a lot. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I hate to be, you know, always money conscious. Adoptions are such a happy experience for people. I hate to even think about charging for that, but and I don't really think it would generate that much revenue.
Would you be able to let me know how many cases we do it in a year? I'd appreciate that
Absolutely.
Information. Thank you.
Martha, go ahead.
I'm sorry, did you say me?
I'm sorry?
You said Martha?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at page 312 in section 4. Pat, that's your list of your full-time equivalents.
Yes.
So I see you've got one probation assistant already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Under probation officer, you've got 12. You've got 3 probation supervisors and 6 senior probation officers and the deputy probation director. Are those all people available to distribute that 100?
No.
How would you do that?
Because senior probation officers are designated to felony drug court, city drug court, and I have 2 probation officers assigned to intensive supervision. Those are all our greatest risk cases, the highest level they have, and they cannot absorb taking on more cases.
Okay.
The maximum they really should be at is 25. They're already higher than that, 30, 32. So they're out of the equation. I have 1 probation officer who handles, in the core criminal unit, who handles the sex offenders. She's already, I believe, at her max for the type of caseload that she has. So I really don't feel comfortable giving her cases. So because of some specialization that we have going on in the department, it really kind of limits how I'm able to distribute these cases.
Okay, so you said you could distribute them among 4 or 5,
four
is that what
five.
You said?
Yeah.
Pat.
Thank
Pat.
You. Pat, you currently have 1 person that's in a probation assistant
yes.
position, correct?
Correct.
Does that person currently supervise any cases?
She does. She's actually responsible for our pretrial release program, and so she's the one who goes up to the jail every day and conducts interviews at the jail for detainees, and she prepares reports to the court to make bail release recommendations. And when a person is released by that court under our supervision, she does have a caseload of people. Right now she has about 23 individuals who are released under her supervision who report to her anywhere from 1 to 5 times a week, depending on what the court orders. And it's her responsibility to make sure they're still in the area and to make sure they attend to their court date. And, you know, it's all about keeping an eye on them to making sure that they actually appear in court. So she does have that caseload. And she also supervises a caseload of out-of-county cases. So, for instance, when we transfer a probationer to another state, the court jurisdiction remains here in New York, remains here in Tompkins County. And in that case, she's responsible for staying in touch with that other state and getting progress reports and making sure that the person's in compliance.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your consideration. I appreciate it.
Social services. And it is section 4, 337 in the big book. And it goes on and on and on from there.
Do you want us to go?
We'll go first. Yeah, county administration. Go ahead. Who are we waiting for?
Tom.
Yeah, I understand it, but who are we waiting for?
Tom.
Oh, okay.
I can answer some questions. Small.
No, that's all right. We'll do CA. Go ahead.
We're doing county administration as for section 4.4.3.
All set. Thank you. This should be a fairly quick review. Our budget is a very simple budget in county administration. Almost all of it is in the form of personnel, with the balance of the budget explained mostly by a professional service line that I'll talk about in a second, but most of that is for cooperative extension to televise and broadcast your proceedings here. So, with respect to the budget, we're up expenditures about 3%. It's a $20,000 increase. Revenues are up all of $800. That simply recognizes that I'm on the Indigent Defense Board. I think I've talked about that often enough where you know about it now. But when I travel, that travel is reimbursed by the state. So we put the revenue that goes along with that in the budget. So the net local is up by a little less than 3% for 2013. Our full-time roster stays where it is. If you approve the OTR that I've recommended, you won't be surprised that I've recommended the OTR that I've put in the budget. But I do want to make it clear that we remain at 6 FTEs next year if you approve the OTR, and I'll explain where those positions are in just a second. Specific to the OTR, this is additional funding. We're not creating a new deputy county administrator, nor are we adding to hours. But you may recall that last year we talked about the desire to take the deputy position that during the worst of our times we had to bring to half-time and build it back to full-time. And we actually accomplished that last year through a combination of target money and one-time money. And we described it as a multi-year phase-in from where we've been to where we'd like to be, which is a fully funded, targeted position. So the OTR simply takes us to the next installment of that by replacing some one-time dollars with ongoing target dollars to support the deputy county administrator position. And again, currently that position is at 1 FTE. We would keep it there in this budget. That's the requested OTR. Just a couple of notes about this budget. 93% of our expenses are personnel, 4%. You'll see if you look at the consolidated pages in professional services, that professional services line is in the high 20s. Almost all of that is the contract that we have with Cooperative Extension for the broadcast of these meetings. The balance of it, I think there's a $2,500 professional service line. It's a part of our compliance where if there are new contracts, new employees, we are obligated to see if there are any things that would basically bar them from participating in federal programs. It's an electronic system. It's a part of our budget for next year for the first time. So that's our professional services. I don't think there are really any other significant changes in this budget to talk about. It's basically status quo. If you have any questions, I'm happy to try to answer them.
Who had their hand up first?
She did.
Okay, Julie and then Pam.
My own ignorance, what is premium pay again?
Overtime.
I couldn't hear that question.
Premium pay is typically overtime.
It's the risk management position. That's what I was asking.
It's a longevity.
It's longevity.
It's longevity. We don't have any overtime.
Pam.
I want to make sure I understand this. So right now the deputy administrator is at 0.7?
Only if you do not approve the OTR.
Okay. Right. But are there are two OTRs here? So this was...
There's just one.
There's just one to take it up to a full-time.
Yeah.
So after this year, after this next year's budget, that position will be restored to a full-time?
Well, it's,
I mean, it'll be restored this year.
Target.
But it's just through Target. I meant through Target, yes.
Yeah, I actually think there's a one-year leg. Let me try to explain the arithmetic, and I'll try not to get tongue-tied in the process. This year, 2012, not 2013, but 2012, to bring the position from half to full, we really combined three different sources of money. We brought $42,000 of Target money into the 2012 budget. You may recall that there was a former legislative chair who at one time swam the lake and raised money, and that money was there for innovation to the county. And last year, as a part of the budget you approved bringing that into my budget, one-time money, 10 grand, and that helped pay for the position. And the third element was a three-year commitment, a multi-year commitment, of $15,000 per year for the next 3 years, so that we could assume greater accountability for the diversity and inclusion programs and other WDIC initiatives in my office. So those were the three sources of money, 42 in Target, 10 in a one-time unique donation, 15,000 in multi-year. In the 2013 budget, we're going to replace that $10,000 donation, the salary it supports, with Target money. So that's a part of the OTR you see. But the other part of that OTR is the continuation of the multi-year money for WDIC. That's phase two. Next year, it'll stay basically where it is because we have the third year of WDIC. It's in 2015 when we will then fully fund this position with Target dollars. If that makes sense.
Pat and Joe.
Followed that a little better that time, but I guess I still don't quite understand why for 2013 that 10,000 that you're talking about replacing now with Target, as I understand it, is still being called an OTR.
It is an OTR, yes.
It's an OTR, but
it's an OTR, but I've recommended it. So the recommended budget that you have in front of you today includes what you see in the OTR, which is the full funding of the position. So if you decide to take a different position on that OTR and you said no to it...
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I just don't understand why it's an OTR if it's in Target.
Because it's basically growth... yeah, that we couldn't support with our target, so we had to build that target back up through an OTR.
And just to reiterate, I think, so that's 2013. What would happen in 2014 then?
2014, we would come back with another OTR. It would bring in the third of the three multi-year payments for the WDIC element. That would come back to you that way. Mm-hmm. And it's only the year after that, when we don't have these one-time sources to pay for the position, that we would need to fill that with target dollars. And I think that's 2015.
Is that what your plan is?
That is the plan. That's the way it was laid out last year when we described how we would phase back from that half-time position to a full-time position with the least impact on levy.
I see. Okay, thank you.
I have Frank and Peter. Did I miss someone? And Martha. Go ahead, Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Joe, stay on the deputy administrator. Will the responsible? I have a couple of questions. Will the responsibilities? I may not have all these right, but Paul has been doing the compliance piece,
right?
And there was another one too that you were involved in.
There's a number of them. Broadband is certainly a centerpiece project that she's been involved in. Grants, the development of a grants management system. So there are a number of, in addition to ongoing duties, a number of projects that she's been involved in.
And that a couple of years ago when we had to put together that quick application to take advantage of the funds for shovel-ready projects or that whole
stimulus
mm-hmm. money. So is there any way to, should we be thinking about speeding up restoring this to a full-time position?
Well, it is a full-time position. It's just how it's funded. That's where it gets a little confusing because it's funded by a combination of one-time money and target money. And again, the one-time money that will remain after we're done with this budget. So this budget still uses multi-year money. Again, another installment of one-time or multi-year money.
But that's for 14.
It's for 14. And then in 15, we would come to you and say, okay, that installment plan is over now. That phase-in plan is over, and we need to do the last step of that phase in with target dollars, and that would occur in 2015.
Okay, so let me shift to another position. The risk manager is no longer doing what that person had been doing for the tourism board, or is doing a lot less of it.
That's true.
And some of the risk management, I don't know if the county attorney has taken some of that responsibility over or not, but is there any movement on responsibilities for that position?
I don't think so. And it's something that we have watched over the last year, because you're right, there was a shift of responsibilities to planning that had been carried by our contracts manager, risk manager. So we've watched that pretty carefully. I will tell you that the ability not to have to juggle so many things has brought additional quality to the elements that are there, the risk management and the contract management process. At some point, we're going to want to bring the legislature some statistics on workers' comp injuries and costs of the county to show you how that trend line has dropped to almost nothing. So there's a lot of really good work that's being done by that individual, and I think it's attributable to the fact instead of trying to juggle a lot of things at the same time, she's able to focus on two critical areas for the county, which is contracts management and risk management.
Okay. Thanks.
I have Peter, Martha, Mike.
Well, I must confess the calculation here is far too complicated for me to follow, so I'll just have to trust you. But I had two questions. Question number one is, perhaps Dooley can answer this. Is there some ethical conflict in the county administrator deciding to accept his own OTR or not? That's question number one. And question number two, is a requirement of the position of being District 11 representative to swim across the lake?
Yes.
You didn't know that?
Good God.
You better get going. Somebody want to answer that? No. They're both rhetorical, right? Martha.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 43, section 4. That's your, like, the overall budget. Yep. And I see on other capital equipment, you've got all of $1,500 this year, down from $4,700 and $89 the year before. So now that you got your chairs, you're all set?
Well, that's basically it. That's where some of the money went, not all. We were in need of a lot of computer upgrading this year. And I think we also shared some of our, I think assigned counsel program needed a laptop, we may have shared there. But with the four chairs now in my office, we didn't need that amount of capital, so we brought it down.
Do we pay for your phone?
Do you pay for my phone? You do not, no. No.
It's not
local.
That's
what someone
might want.
You mean his cell phone?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the phone he uses all the time. Okay.
Anyone else? I'm sorry. Any other questions, Martha?
No.
Okay, then I have Mike and then Leslie.
Make a question. Joe, wouldn't it be a good idea to mention the work that the Deputy County Administrator does with respect to the administrative manuals, a job which I don't think I could be paid enough to take the leadership of.
Well, you know, we could go along on this because certainly that is something that she does, and there is tedium, but it's also critical. I can tell you the compliance effort is just amazing. There's been some other people who have been in front of you already who participated in that. An incredibly difficult, burdensome thing, but also increasingly important to the county to have it done and done right. Paula was involved in that. And really, from time to time, projects arise. You asked Frank about, you know, what she's been involved in the past. Projects arise. And without somebody of that skill set in the office, we couldn't support a project like broadband. You know, we're all doing other things. So it really does give us, as a county, the capacity to do things that we otherwise couldn't do. So it's really important.
Leslie.
Joe, talk about juggling a whole bunch of things. Certainly, it's something Paula has been doing, and I sort of spoke to the other night. My question is the one-time money in here because we had already taken action on that last year?
The $15,000, yeah, you did. It was a three-year multi-year.
So that's in there.
That's a really good point.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm with Peter. I'm trying to follow the math here. And so instead, because we'd already, and I'm not swimming, because we'd already taken action on this, there's no way to just say we're looking for $26,000 in target. We need to follow that action, and then when that expires, move to a different lineup.
Much better put than I did, yes.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Anyone else? Thank you, Joe.
Did you want to swim the lake?
There have been moments, yes.
Social services. Thanks, Joe.
Hello. Hi there. So this is
Department of Social Services 2013 budget presentation. We'll start out with Kevin. What did I do? Oh, the. So this is our total budget. We're comparing the 2012 budget with the 2013 recommended budget, and we're showing you the expenditures, the revenues, and the net local costs. We're showing you the change in dollars and the percentage change from year to year. As you can see, we have a little bit more expenditures, a little bit less revenue, and the total net local cost change of 7.9.
Patricia, it's hard to hear you.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. What we decided to do to expand a little bit on that first slide was to break it out between mandates and non-mandates, so you could get a sense of things that we have some control over and things that we have no control over. In our mandates, you can see that that's where we have some fairly significant changes that we don't have any control over. Questions at the end. I'm sorry. So the next slide is we thought it would be helpful for to walk through where some of these increases and decreases are coming from. And I think I think we've talked about this in the Health and Human Services committee meeting. Our Medicaid costs are going up, and then we have the anomaly of a 53rd week in 2013, and that's going to be another $235,000. We were able to reduce some administrative costs by keeping some positions unfilled for a period of time and shifting things around. But the bottom line is with the salary increase and the fringe increase, it sort of cancels those reduced spending out. And we don't have any control over that. The other major influences are some state reimbursements that have decreased. I think you all know that the state imposed a Medicaid administrative cap, and that's going to have a $131,000 effect on us. The state also eliminated the child support admin money that we were getting from the state. They reduced our daycare block grant, and they reduced the reimbursement rate for juvenile delinquent services. Full-time equivalents, we anticipate one position increase, and we have 0.44 staff increase that we have staff in now. But the one position is a position that's in a grant that we wrote. So there is no one in that position now, and we don't know if we've got the grant. So that may be there, or it may not be. The 0.44 increase, we decided to bring in HEAP application processing into our department. We had been contracting that out, and we hired two seasonal project assistants to perform those jobs. So they will be done in the end of February. I just want to go back to this because I think you really need to understand what's going on at the department. Our caseloads have increased incredibly in food stamps, Medicaid, and child welfare. Our Child Protective Services hotline calls have almost doubled from last year. We're seeing an increase every day in the number of food stamps applications, and we have not added staff. We're doing a really, really good job, and I want you to be proud of your workers because they are taking care of business, but they're shouldering the burden.
Could you just say again what areas the caseloads have gone up?
Medicaid, food stamps, and child welfare. So these are our over-target requests that Joe has supported. We had a person retire in our employment unit. She's the supervisor of the employment unit, and she does all of our fair hearings. And we have put that out as an over-target. We don't have anybody assigned to do that, so various people are picking up the workload that that person was assigned to. It's putting a burden on our employment unit, but we put it out as an over target. Don't ask me what STSIP stands for. It's juvenile justice money, and that is contracted for some various services for juveniles. And another over target are the COTS contracts. We've talked about those every year. The state is continuing to chip away at the funding for those programs. Those are our child welfare preventive services programs. They provide service to families and children who are in need of support to keep their children safe and healthy. We have the replacement of two fleet vehicles. We have a fleet vehicle replacement program where we try to replace the older cars every year. We have a van that we use to transport children to visitation and to various programming, and we want to replace that. And then finally, our security system upgrade. Our building is now maybe 11 years old, and we are finding that there are places that we have equipment that can no longer be fixed because the parts no longer exist, the company no longer exists, and we need to upgrade some of that in order to keep our building functioning. This is what Joe is not recommending. The additional cost of replacing the vehicles with hybrids. And as you can see, I didn't mention, we have three items where we are recommending the use of rollover. That's it.
Question. Mark.
Thank you both. Hi, Tom. How are you? The Medicaid admin cap, like the fifth one, now, I know the fiscal years get wonky, which the state passed a budget, took effect April 1st, and established the cap on reimbursement. We were one of a dozen or so counties that couldn't pay for our administrative costs under that cap in the first year. So they were supposed to, they said they would make us whole. Now that was, is that this, or is this yet a new year? Help me understand
This is that.
Okay, this is the first year of
the cap.
Of the cap. And I think you told me a while ago that, like, in November they do the reconciliation.
We've been told that that's when we can anticipate the reconciliation.
Does reconciliation mean money?
No.
I mean, have they accepted our calculation that this is the delta?
I think the reconciliation that you and Commissioner Carey are referencing is not directly the same as the newly established cap on state reimbursement for Medicaid administration. The reconciliation that you're referencing is something that has been performed annually since the state capped the amount that local districts contribute toward the overall cost of Medicaid program and administrative costs each year. I believe that was 7 years ago.
Okay.
A part of that legislation was that annually the state needed to reconcile that approach with the previous approach, and if any district ended up paying more than it would have otherwise, the state would then reimburse the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That has happened a couple of times. We have gotten some money, but only because of the temporary federal ARRA funding increase of a few years back. With regard to the newly passed state cap on Medicaid administration, that figure up there represents the difference between the amount of state reimbursement that we would have gotten under the previous system and the amount that we are anticipating getting in 2013 based on that cap's now existing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain amount of estimating going on, because what was established with the passage of that state legislation was the proportional amount that each district will get of whatever the state chooses to set to provide in the way of reimbursement for Medicaid administration each year. They didn't say this year how much they're going to set aside next year. So the state could set aside more money. They could set aside less money. All that we know for certain is what percentage of all the money that they set aside we'll get. So in projecting next year what our shortfall is going to be, we used the figure based on the amount they set aside this year. Does that make sense?
I think so. So we will tell them that 131 is that gap. We don't know really what they'll reimburse us back.
We don't know now. We won't know until next year's state budget passes how much money the state has set aside for Medicaid administrative reimbursement. As soon as the state budget passes, and we know that statewide figure, it will be easy to calculate what our share will be.
But they already passed it. But aren't we living in the budget that they passed that started April 1st?
Yes, we are.
Because I'm trying to figure out, did they make us whole like they said they were? Would, or are we still waiting for that to be decided? Or
there's no language in the legislation that says they'll make anybody whole. I know representations have been made to that effect. And I believe, Les, that Joe heard, that whoever is saying that is saying it so for this year only. Is that right, Joe?
Okay, but
they continue to say that.
But they haven't done it yet.
Well, they wouldn't really have a basis for doing it until after this year, after districts have submitted their reimbursement claims, if there are some number of districts who have claims in excess of the amount that the state set aside. It'd only be at that point that if they're going to make anybody whole, that they would do that.
Okay. At the end of the calendar year or their budget year?
The cap is on an annual basis, calendar year basis. That's based on local district expenditures. Does that answer your question? So districts would claim their reimbursement for the month of December. They'd submit their claims in January. The state usually would settle those claims in March. I don't know exactly when they would intend to make anybody whole, if in fact they're going to do that.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mike?
Well, I guess I'm going to put in a comment, and that is, I guess this legislature, I believe, understands that when times get hard, people turn to government for more social services, and we certainly appreciate the extra effort that your department and staff are putting into that. This may be an off-the-wall question, and maybe because I just don't understand all the services out there, but I read recently where the federal government is claiming that it's overpaid New York State by $15 billion for, I believe, Medicaid aid for the developmental disabilities programs. Is any of that money flowing to us? Are we liable to, if the feds want reimbursement, that we could get hit by that?
That, do you have an opinion on that?
If you don't know, I can understand.
I believe scary. What I've read is that it's a matter of that disabled system of care overbilling for services that they've provided, so we wouldn't have anything to do with
that. We don't
have
any connection in any of our programs to that.
Right.
That's all I wanted to know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Will.
I'll have.
Doolin.
I don't think I've ever seen a separate OTR for making car purchases be hybrids. And was that your idea? To give us a choice?
I think we did last year.
I guess I don't. I didn't remember that. So is there something that says that the state contract is the best way to get the hybrids? And how do you know what the cost will be for the next year?
Well, we don't know for certain until OGS establishes the state contract for vehicles for next year. But we use the figures that were shared with all departments at the budget training, that's my recollection anyway. And there are figures for standard vehicles and figures for hybrids. I don't know if that is the least expensive way, but for most items like that, it would be.
There used to be a very small selection of hybrids, and there are so many more now that it's hard for me to understand the figures, but it's not a big part of your budget. I was just curious.
Anyone else? Dave, Martha.
I was wondering if you have had the opportunity to look into leftover cars from the CHA program.
When I spoke to Frank Krupa, he said that several other departments had already scooped them up. So I wasn't quick enough, I guess. But they have been
including
distributed among other departments. That's my understanding.
Martha.
Patricia, on this whole idea of the administrative cap is predicated on the idea that the State Department of Health is supposed to be taking over the administration of Medicaid. And therefore, we can afford to cap, to have the reimbursements capped because they're going to be taking workload over from us. Now, that's not happened yet, and we don't have any good projection on what will happen. You and I, we talked at NYSAC before I went to NYSAC because I was moderating that workshop about this issue. You explained to me that the State Department of Health had asked every social services district whether we wanted to stay involved and be a contract, essentially a contract agency to continue these Medicaid administration, or give up some of it or give up all of it, short-term, long-term, and your answer was that you want to short-term stay in the business and long-term stay in the business.
Yes.
That's a really important issue for this body to understand, I think. So could you explain what that means and what is, like, if we are doing that, is it your understanding that we would get paid additional reimbursements for doing the work?
What the Department of Health issued was a statement of interest in asking every county department of social services what our interest would be in continuing to have a relationship with Medicaid. Our department has so little understanding of what the state takeover of Medicaid actually will mean that we determined that the statement of interest isn't a contract. It's not a doesn't bind us to anything. I am concerned about the state takeover of Medicaid and how smoothly or not smoothly it's been running. And I did not feel comfortable making any statements saying that the state should be taking over Medicaid until I can see a plan of how they're going to do it and what that would mean for the county. It's been presented at meetings that they would contract with local departments of social services to provide the service. There's not been any discussion about what financial impact that would be on the department. There really are no clear steps in place about what the state takeover would look like. So I don't think it would behoove us to commit to anything. I believe that we serve our residents very well, and I'm not convinced that the state has the same interest in serving the members of our community that we have.
Okay, thanks for explaining that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me just mention some things I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting. People wanted to hear again. We are our forum is on October 9th, 7 p.m. second floor, the old courthouse. Our voting meetings are October 23rd, 5:30; October 25th, 6:30; October 30th, 5:30. The next meeting of this group will be 10:10 at 5:30. And anyone have any questions? Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.